I've had it with a lot of you. No one seems to know what they want around here. There's all this talk of honor and sacrifice and changes in power and manipulation and secrets. So many secrets. Well, I'm flushing it all out into the open. It ends tonight.
It can't.
Why?
I reached over, grabbed her by the wrist.
Tell me why. Why can't it?
I can't.
Why not?
None can know.
Know what?
Morden sailed into the room like a thrown javelin. He struck me in the chest with such force that he knocked me flat on my back.
Leave her alone.
This is none of your business, Morden.
Oddly apropos, I get to choose what is and isn't my business.
Fine. You choose your business, then.
I stood and straightened my clothes, endeavoring to recapture some degree of dignity.
Mine is with the Imperia. Tonight.
You can't!
I can! Why? Do you plan to stop me?
I tapped the demon sword with one hand.
I wouldn't advise it. Matters could prove ugly.
She stared at me for a long moment. It seemed as if she were trying to bore deep into the recesses of my mind with her dark eyes.
You're bluffing! He's bluffing!
No. No, I'm not.
You will not go and utilize a weapon as devastating as a demon sword against my father.
Mitsu, you have no idea of the horrors I saw when I was on that road. The innocents who suffered. You have no idea what those sights did to me. Whatever you think you know of Apropos, whatever you think motivates me, it's gone. What remains is a man who can only still the sobbing voices of your father's victims by putting an end to your father himself. I hear them, you know. The voices. The dead villagers, all of them gone, dying brutal, horrible deaths. And your father has the nerve to tell me that he wants things to change? He wants them to be different. Then he takes me into another room, speaks to me privately, tells me of his grand plans for Chinpan, and within minutes he's already sounding like his old self. Talks about ritual suicide in a nostalgic way. Nostalgic! Do you comprehend the irony of that? The man hasn't even done away with the practice, and he's already dwelling in sentimental fashion upon the good old days that haven't even left us yet. He's insane, Mitsu. You were right all along. You were always right. The man is too dangerous to live. You have my condolences that he's your father. Obviously, however, the fact that he is your father is proving too much of an obstacle to get past. That's fine. I can understand that. I spent much of my youth dwelling upon how I would love to kill my father, if I only knew who he was. When I did discover it, did I kill him? No. I didn't have the stomach for it. And if you don't have the stomach for this, I completely understand. But this is not for the lack of fortitude, Mitsu. This is something that has to be done, and if you are not prepared to do it, then I most certainly am. The only question is, do you desire to be there when I do it or not?
She wavered, looking uncertain. Morden looked from one of us to the other.
Mitsu, perhaps it's...
Yes. Yes, I will be there. If it is your desire to kill him on my behalf, then the least I can do is be there to watch. To bear witness to the end of the tyrant.
That was what she was saying. But I was positive there was more going through her head than that. She was making some sort of alternate plans. I couldn't know what they were, although I had a guess or two. It was pure speculation, however. I wouldn't know for sure until the actual moment came.
Very well. Tonight, then.
How do you plan to sneak in?
Sneak in? My dear princess, I am an invited guest.
Oh! How very clever. You needn't worry about gaining entrance, for you are already invited. But what about his guards?
There will be none. He trusts me, you see.
And the sword? In private conference, he will not permit any weapons to be brought into his presence.
Oh, he'll allow this one.
Why?
Because I said I would make a present of it to him. He has no idea of the sword's true nature. He simply admires the craftsmanship of the hilt. But he will find out. Yes, my dear Mitsu. He will most assuredly find out.
I was standing in a garden outside the palace, watching the setting sun. The stunning fragrance reminded me in so many ways of Vera. I wondered what she was doing right about then. I thought of wandering through the garden with her, an arm draped about her shoulders and making love to her under the scented trees that dotted the landscape.
Hello, Mordant.
There came no immediate answer. I turned in the direction I thought he was, and he wasn't there. I frowned, and then his voice came from a tree behind me.
What are you up to, apropos?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Yes, you are, and yes, you do. I know you too well, have known you for too long. You do nothing unless it's for yourself. So what is there to be gained for you by killing the Imperia? There's certainly much more to be gained if he lives.
Peace of mind to start. If he dies, no more innocents will perish.
Innocents perish all the time, apropos. They perish, they suffer, they're treated in horribly unfair ways. The death of one man, no matter how powerful he may be in local circles, isn't going to change that. Except I shouldn't have to tell you that. You know it already. Which brings us right back to my wondering what it is you have up your sleeve.
I'm tired, Morton, that's all.
Tired of what?
Of letting bastards win. Of not doing anything about it because I think it threatens me. Of believing that because I can't save the entirety of the world, I shouldn't bother to try and save any of it. You have no idea how exhausting it is, always seeing the worst in everything. I want to try and make a difference. I want to try and be something.
Can I accept the evidence of my own ear holes? Are you actually aspiring to be a hero?
I don't know. I don't think so. A hero is filled with altruism and lives on a high moral plane. I'm simply someone tired of not giving a damn, so I figure I might as well try and give a damn about something. Because not giving a damn about anything isn't making me happy.
Well, I'm impressed. I am indeed impressed. There is just one thing that the two of us have to completely understand.
And what is that?
If you in any way try and hurt the princess, the last thing you will feel will be my teeth upon your throat.
Mordant, and here I thought you were my friend.
I am. Were I not your friend, I would not have warned you. Now that you are warned, what you choose to do with the information is up to you.
You are too kind to me, Mordant.
Yes, I know. It's my single fault.
Mordant launched himself away from the tree and angled away toward the palace. Mitsu came to my room as I adjusted the sword upon my belt. My bastard sword was standing upright neatly in the corner, and the sai were crisscrossed on the floor in front of it. I would have no need for them that night. She was dressed differently than I was used to seeing her, outfitted in a green silken kimono, which did much to set off her eyes.
Are you quite all right, Princess?
Yes, quite all right.
Come, your father is expecting me in his private quarters. We would not want to do something thoroughly impolite, such as be late.
Waiting for you, but not for me.
I didn't mention that you would be accompanying me. Why? Does that present a problem, do you think? He is your father, after all. Certainly he should be glad to see his own daughter, even if it is unexpected.
Yes, of course he would.
We passed through the vast hallways, strangely devoid of guards. I admired the statues, the tapestries depicting great moments in the history of Chimpan. Mitsu walked beside me, head held high. She didn't seem to walk so much as glide across the floor, as if she had runners strapped to her feet and was moving across ice. We reached the doors on the Imperial's quarters, and it was nice to see they weren't made of paper. That would afford more privacy. The doors instead were large lacquered wood with carvings of birds and snakes upon them. The snakes had their mouths open and were moving towards birds who were desperately trying to get out of their way, and did not seem, by the look of things, to be destined to succeed. I found the imagery rather disturbing.
Enter!
I gestured in an after you manner, and Mitsu, with a quick nod, entered the room. Her father was seated on an elevated chair at the far end, his hands resting lightly on the carved armrest, which also had the heads of snakes on either one. He was smiling gently, one eyebrow cocked, when he saw that Mitsu had come with me.
This is unexpected. Greetings, my child.
Hello, father. It has been a little while since we chatted.
Much has happened. Paul here has said many interesting things.
We're here to kill you.
I see. With that...
He nodded towards the sword on my hip.
Yes.
You said you would make a gift of it.
And so I shall. I'll deliver it point first.
For someone who is about to die, the Imperia seemed quite calm.
Indeed. And may I ask why you are about to take this murderous action?
Tell him. She looked from him to me and back again.
Because of all you've done, Father. Because of what you did to the boy in the marketplace.
Oh, Mitsu, not that again. When will you grow up? When will you know
that— I have grown up, Father. I've made powerful allies. Allies who are enemies of yours. It's about time you realized it. It's about time you came to understand what it is you've done and what it is you've brought upon yourself.
Allies? Enemies? What are you going on about?
The Aeneas Ninjas, Father. The Forked Tongue. They are my family now. They support me. They love me in a way that you never did.
I don't believe you. A princess would not associate with such as they. You could not be a member of—
Abruptly, Mitsu reached up and ripped open the front of her kimono. Beneath it was the distinctive black outfit of the Sisterhood of the Aeneas Ninja. She tossed aside the kimono, lifted up the cowl, and tied it tightly across her face in one smooth move. She did not have a sword strapped across her back, but she did have a knife tucked in her belt.
Return to your room and dispose of that costume at once. This is intolerable behavior, and I will not stand for it.
I would not speak in such a condescending tone if I were you, Father. For at this moment, I am the only thing standing between you and certain death.
Actually, I am the only thing standing between you and certain death. And to be honest, my daughter, my stance is not especially firm.
The hammer and rye came from everywhere. Hidden doors opened from everywhere. Even a chair slid aside to reveal a hole in the floor from which a hammer and rye appeared. All of them had their swords out, and all of them were focused upon Mitsu.
Apropos! No!
And she waited. And nothing happened. I simply stood there, looking at her sadly.
You lying bastard!
Mitsu yanked the knife from her belt and came at me. But the hammer and rye, the cream of the crop, were far faster and more fleet of foot than I. Barely had she taken three steps before five of the soldiers had piled upon her, bearing her to the ground. Two grabbed her arms, two her legs, and one threw himself directly across her torso.
Apropos!
It did her no good as the hammer and rye tossed her knife aside and hauled her to her feet.
I'll kill you, Apropos, I swear! I'll kill you myself, you betraying piece of slime!
Mitsu, he knew.
You promised the Forked Tongue! You—
I was upon her then, grabbing her face with my hand so I could look her straight in the eyes.
Mitsu, he knew. Listen to me. He knew what you were up to. He knew, or at the very least suspected, your alliance with the Aeneas Ninjas. He confronted me with his suspicions as a concerned father. What was I supposed to do?
I stepped back, trying to wipe the liquid from my eyes.
What were you supposed to do? Lie. It's what you do. It's what you're best at. It's what you did to me and to Vera Wangho. To all of us. You swore fealty.
To murderers, Mitsu? To murderers and thugs and criminals who would eventually turn against each other? Believe me, I know. Such alliances never last. I had to get you out.
You get me out? You mean get me killed?
No, no, your father doesn't want that for you, and I don't—
You bastard!
Considering I am a bastard, you might want to give up on the idea of trying to wound me with that insult, Mitsu. It's a cult. These women, it's a cult movement that's dragged you in, and you come to a bad end because of it. I couldn't just stand by.
So you betrayed me.
I didn't betray you. I told you. He already knew.
How? How could he?
I told him.
It took a moment to register upon me who had spoken even as I turned and looked in disbelief. Go, no go. The deceased head of security swaggered toward me. His face bore that same scowl as always, and he barely looked at me. Apparently, he was reserving his contempt for the princess.
May the gods save us from pretty young women who are not remotely as clever as they think they are.
You said he was dead. Another lie.
No. No, I saw him die. I saw him—
A sword wielded by a woman. Kill me? Stun me? Send into shock so that I had to withdraw deep into myself, into meditation, to heal myself.
He scratched at his chest.
It still itches. I'll give that to the black-clad bitch who did this. But kill me? No.
You, Imperia, you said nothing to me about his being alive.
You did not ask.
Which, I had to admit, was true enough. Mitsu struggled to break free once more, but their grip upon her was too strong.
So what did you think was going to happen here, apropos? My father was going to embrace me. Forgive me the error of my ways. Don't you understand? He's going to try and use me to destroy the Forked Tongue, to bring down the Alliance.
I already told you me to, an Alliance of thieves and murderers.
And still better than he is. A tyrant, a dark sorcerer enforcing his reign of terror.
That is enough, Go-No-Go.
Go-No-Go immediately stepped behind her, pulling out a cloth sash and drawing it across her mouth. Imperia, is that really necessary?
Yes. Yes, I believe it is. So, we apparently have in our hands a sister of the dreaded Aeneas Ninjas, and a close ally of the legendary Vera Wang Ho as well. Go-No-Go, what do you suggest we do with her? Bait, perhaps?
There is a slight possibility that would work, but only slight and truly not very likely. Despite her importance to the cause in terms of her connections, I doubt they would risk themselves to save her.
The alternative?
Torture would seem the best way to proceed.
Very well.
Imperia, that...
Yes?
He stared at me with open curiosity, as if he couldn't imagine what I could possibly say, or even worse, what objection I could put forward.
Torture? Your own daughter?
Why not? She would have killed me.
No, I don't think so. Remember, she said she was the only thing standing between you and death. Back when she thought I meant to dispose of you myself, didn't that prove her loyalty? Her determination to keep you alive?
No, it only proved her selfishness. She will be tortured for information, and if she does not provide it, she will die. It is no more involved than that.
It bloody well is! Imperia, we talked a long time, spoke of many things, of compassion and changing the way things were done.
Honorable Poe, I would have said whatever was required to reveal my daughter's duplicity and to encourage you to help us gain a wedge into the Forked Tongue. Why else do you think you were welcomed so willingly?
The chill settled into me then, and I slowly looked around the room, saw the smirks and smiles of the Hamenrai as they readied their swords with great anticipation.
A trick. It was all a trick.
We had given up on finding you. And then, what should happen but that you walk right up to the palace, swaggering as big as life. We would have been fools not to exploit the opportunity. Rather than sending men out to attack you, why not welcome you, praise you, treat you as a long-lost man of greatness?
So what you told me about the Great Wall holding back the Mingle hordes?
Oh, no, that was quite true. We know, however, that you did not intend for that to happen. It was simply luck on your part. Still, we benefited from it, so I did wish you to know that I was most appreciative of it.
Go-No-Go advanced on me then. His face could have been carved out of stone.
One thing you will tell me, and I suspect that torture will not be necessary, for it is my belief that merely the slightest hint of potential pain will be enough to get you to speak freely. A number of my men have not returned. Where are they? Did your Forked Tongue allies dispose of them?
Do you want to know?
Yes.
Do you really want to know?
This is not a joke, Poe. The amount of cooperation you provide me now will determine whether you die quickly and mercifully, or slowly and agonizingly.
To die quickly or slowly? My hand went to my sword hilt.
Tough choice.
The other Hamenrai automatically tensed, ready for a battle. But Go-No-Go simply smiled.
Please. Yes, by all means. Draw your weapon. I would welcome a fight with you.
Obediently, I drew the bird's head sword.
Now, you will tell me what I want to know. And for every minute that passes, that you do not give me the answers I like, I will sever a body part.
Seems fair. Perhaps you might want to start with your balls. I'd love to hear how you sound as a eunuch.
Not my body parts.
Oh, you mean my body parts?
Yes. Perhaps I will start with your tongue.
If you insist. But you're the one who will have to deal with your wife's complaints when I can't give her oral pleasure anymore.
The point of Go-No-Go's sword trembled a foot away from me. He was clearly doing everything he could to fight an impulse to behead me right then.
Do you not care that I am about to kill you as slowly as humanly possible?
Funny you should, as... No. I don't care.
He raised up his sword to have at me, And then the demon sword began to tremble. The hammer and I stepped back, bewildered.
Kill him! Quickly! That's no ordinary Tachi blade! He discovered Kumagatu, the demon sword! I should have recognized it immediately!
And that was all he had the time to say before the blade twisted and bent back upon itself and the demon all hell broke loose once more. The others, who were astounded and shocked, brought their weapons up and tried to engage in combat without having a clear idea of what they were facing. I, however, knew and was already one step ahead of them. I charged forward as they were distracted by the hissing, spitting demon, and I brought my walking staff up and around and slammed it into the nearest of the soldiers, who were holding Mitsu. He staggered, and the moment his grip was less than firm upon her, Mitsu yanked her arm completely free and slammed an elbow into the face of the guard on the other side. The right half of her body was free, and then the Hamunrai, who had been endeavoring to hold her captive, released her as they grabbed for their swords. I didn't have to see why. I knew. Then he was upon them. Even as he proceeded to shred them in his customary unstoppable manner, I was shoving Mitsu towards the door. It was imperative I got her out of the room before the demon spotted her, or I was going to have to do everything I could to haul him off her before he sliced her to ribbons. And I didn't want to bank on my being able to stop him. Mitsu barely resisted. She was watching the berserk demon in shocked horror. My back was to him, but I could hear the rending and tearing and screams. I could imagine what she was witnessing at the last moment. Just when I had her to the door, she started to push back.
You have to get out. If he sees you in here, you're dead.
But!
No buts!
My father! You have to save him! I need him!
Mixed signals? Thy name was Mitsu.
No promises!
I slammed the door in her face. Then I turned to see what the damage was, just as Go-No-Go's head rolled up to my feet. I didn't hesitate, taking the opportunity to swing my good left foot and kick the head halfway across the room. Then I turned to see the demon's progress. As always, the slogan had been thorough. Pieces of the Hamunrai were everywhere. The room was a literal bloodbath. At that moment, all hell was holding an unfortunate soldier over his head, gripping him by the right leg and the left arm. With one fierce pull, he ripped the soldier apart, then used the leg of the man he just dismembered to club another into submission. Then he turned and faced the Imperior. The Imperior had gone deathly pale, his back up against the chair, but his face was a mask of concentration. He had his hands in front of him, his fingertips facing one another. He was speaking quickly in a tongue I did not understand. Blue, crackling energy was jumping from one hand to the other, and suddenly he flung open his hands, and the energy leaped across the room and crashed into all hell. For an instant, a look of triumph appeared on the Imperial's face. But then the Slow Jim was on his feet again.
Your she is weak, Sorcerer. Look at you, you can barely stand.
All hell was correct. And not only that, but the Imperial looked measurably older than he had moments ago. His face more wrinkled, his eyes more shrunken, his hands trembling. He tried to mount a defense, but it clearly was going to do no good. All hell advanced on him, his long pointed talons clicking together in anticipation.
Save me!
I considered it coolly and decided I was not so inclined. All hell lashed out and the Imperial fell back, desperately trying to avoid the Slogan's attack. He turned to run, and all hell's talons raked across his back, tearing through his elaborate robes and hitting flesh and bone beneath. The Imperial fell, hitting the floor hard, blood welling up upon his back, and all hell moved in for the kill. Suddenly, Morden dove down from overhead. He whipped around, getting between the Slogan and the Imperial, and darted at All Hell's face. All Hell lashed out at Morden, trying to catch him. The drabbit was fast, however. He swept in, slicing fast with his claws fully extended. All Hell swept an arm around, almost caught him, but missed.
Morden, get out of here!
No! We need the Imperial alive! No!
That last outcry was because as fast as Mordant was, all hell was faster. The demon had snagged Mordant, and it was only going to be a moment's work for him to rip the drabbit's head free of its neck.
Damn it!
I held the sword tightly.
I don't care!
All hell staggered as magic swept from the hilt, trying to reform him into the sword. He released Mordant and turned to face me.
I warned you once, boy! You keep trying to use a few words to bottle up forces that you've unleashed. It doesn't work that way! The forces of nothingness are not yours to tamper with at your whim. I am ultimate destruction, boy. You cannot toy with nihilism, nor dabble with the abyss, or sooner or later, it will swallow all. Whole! Whole!
My breath was heavy in my chest, and I wasn't sure, but I thought I'd gone slightly, although, ideally, only temporarily deaf. I lay there panting and looking across the room to see the Imperial lying there, not appearing in particularly good shape. I didn't think he was going to make it. At that moment, I didn't give a damn. Mordant was lying on the ground near me. He looked a bit battered, but otherwise he was fine. His eyes glowed as he looked up at me.
Thanks.
'Twas no problem.
The door to the room was shoved open and Mitsu entered quickly. She ran toward Mordant, picked him up and cradled the banged-up rabbit in her arms. She looked at the Imperia, with blood covering his back.
Father! Oh no! No!
Then she looked down at me and kicked me in the small of the back.
Ow! Was that really necessary?
I told you to protect my father!
Well...
I hauled myself to my feet.
I was unaware I took orders from Princess Spitz in my face. The only reason your father is still drawing air into his lungs at all is because I sent the demon back so that he wouldn't kill Mordant. My sympathies are not with dear old Daddy at the moment.
We don't need your sympathies. We need your help.
There's only one healer in all of Qinpan who can help him now. Vera Wang Ho.
You can't be serious. She'll never come here.
We can bring him to the Noble Ho. There are ways out of here. Secret ways that I've used to get in and out. The Noble Ho will be able to cure him, to...
Why? Tell me why. I deserve to know. Why in the world should we be going out of our way to help this so-called ruler?
For me. I'll need you to help him for me.
For you? Why for you, Mordant? What interest does he have
for... He's my lover!
Hush, you promised.
Your father is your lover? Gods, that is the most horrible, hideous...
Not my father, you idiot! Him!
And she pointed at Mordant. I stared at her blankly, convinced she'd lost her mind. And then I realized. It all snapped into place.
Oh, my gods. Oh, my dear gods. You! You're the peasant boy. The boy from the marketplace. The one Mitsu said she fell in love with. You! You were human?
Of course I was human. I'm a talking dragon, for God's sake. Have you ever met any talking animal in your life?
Well, no.
And it never once occurred to you to ask me how I was able to converse with you. Not even once.
I thought you were magic. Once I accepted the notion that you were magic, anything seemed possible, so I...
Apropos... Duh. For someone who fancies himself to be exceptionally intelligent, you can be astoundingly stupid sometimes.
I told you my father was a powerful wizard. When he discovered my true love, he called up a deep and powerful curse and placed it upon him.
She walked quickly over to her father and knelt, examining his wounds.
He transformed my beloved into what you see here and sent him away. Far, far away. But he came back to me.
Took a while. A couple of years.
But why didn't you tell me?
Because although my father unleashed the curse, he didn't know what sort of animal my love had been changed into. We didn't want to take any chance that he might find out. We have to hurry. We have to bring him to Vera Wang Ho. He is the only one who can remove the curse upon my beloved. If that doesn't happen...
You're a drabbit forever.
Not a bad fate if you're born this way. Somewhat unfortunate if you once possessed another form.
All right, fine. Let's get out of here. But with something slightly less noticeable than the bloodied body of the ruler of old Qinpan.
It was but the work of a moment to tear down a tapestry and wind the Imperial up in it. He was in no shape to protest, his head lolling and looking deathly pale. All right, let's get out of here. Do you know where Vera Wang can be found?
The Noble Ho will meet us in Docktown.
I immediately took that to mean the section of the city we'd been to before, with the overhanging roofs and the sense of perpetual darkness. How do you know she'll be there?
I'll make certain of it. Although my guess is that Ho will know before I even get there.
My love is right. The Noble Ho has eyes and ears everywhere. By the time we're approaching the dwelling of the Aeneas ninjas, the Noble Ho will be prepared for us.
Which was fine, of course, for those whose loyalty to the Forked Tongue and its associate members was unquestioned. For one such as me, however, I was concerned of the likelihood of my life being extended much beyond its current measure.
Do not concern yourself.
We headed down the hallway with a blood-stained tapestry slung over my shoulder.
Nothing useful ever came out of worrying.
Sudden death?
How is sudden death useful?
Better than a slow, lingering death.
This way.
She headed over toward one of the panels of the wall. Mitsu certainly knew what she was talking about when it came to hidden passages. Apparently, they had been there long before her father became Imperior. They had been built by predecessors who were trying to anticipate a time when they might have to leave as quickly as possible, because of either invasion from without or uprising from their own people. I wasn't entirely surprised. The castle of King Runcible had similar secret passages, constructed for much the same reasons. It was intriguing that those who were ostensibly the most powerful individuals in the land always seemed to fear for their lives and plan for escapes, whereas the least powerful individuals in the land resided in single-room huts and were quite content to do so, going to sleep every night in relative peace. Not easy to determine, when considering that, who was truly in charge of their own destinies. The princess had discovered a moving panel on the wall of her room when she was very young, and from that point on had used the secret passages to explore the palace and go wherever she wanted, whenever she wanted. It was one of the few things about her life that ever made her feel powerful. She would sit and watch her father's meetings from hiding and be smug over never being seen. And on several occasions, she witnessed dark rituals her father performed, and they chilled her and frightened her and made her realize just what it was she was dealing with.
Even before I saw him performing the rituals, I would know after the fact he had done one.
We move like ghosts through the walls.
He would age.
Age?
The magics he channeled were so powerful that they would drain life energy from his body. He would dispose of enemies, achieve alliances, transform people when he desired to make their lives a living hell. But it would always take something out of him. That's why he did it less and less as time wore on. My father looks so old to your eyes, does he not? Ancient, even. That's deceptive. In terms of how many years he's been in this world, he's not really all that old. What's so funny?
I am. The situation is.
What?
I'm a side character. Again.
A what?
An incidental individual. A throwaway cast member. A sidekick. One who thinks his own life really matters and who is experiencing his own great adventure. And it turns out that I'm experiencing yours.
She stepped carefully over some slime that had gathered on the shore. Not too far ahead of us, I could see moonlight filtering through. We were drawing nearer to the exit.
I still cannot say I understand what you were talking about.
You and your heroic young man in the marketplace. Or, as I call him, Mordred the snide and occasionally annoying Drabbit. You and he have this grand and great tragic romance that I've been pulled into. Your story is the truly interesting one. I'm just this foolish individual who's been trying to change his life, find love, make something interesting of himself. In short, operate in a manner contrary to his nature, but to have, if nothing else, something different to think about and do and contemplate. And you...
I readjusted her father around my shoulders once again.
I can see what I'm saying remains impenetrable to you. Don't concern yourself with it.
No, it's not impenetrable at all. I grasp what you're saying now. You liken your life and the lives of those around you to great literary adventures or tales of mythic accomplishments.
Yes, exactly.
And you consider yourself to be something other than the central figure.
a subordinate character who participates in the lives of others who are far more interesting and unique, while constantly being frustrated that he himself amounts to nothing.
You do understand.
The exit out was so narrow that we could only emerge one at a time. In fact, it was little more than a hole, so we had to crawl through it. Mitsu eased herself through first, and then I slid the rat form of her father, which she pulled out from the other side. I shoved my head in, twisting and insinuating my body through. When my head poked out the other side, I sucked in fresh air.
So, this is what birth is like.
Very funny.
She helped me up the rest of the way. We sat there for a moment, resting from the exertion. Actually, I was the one who had exerted myself. Mitsu wasn't even breathing hard.
You're wrong, you know.
About what?
About what you're saying. About your point of view. Our story, a tale of my lover and I, has been seen and told and retold any number of times. Look at us, star-crossed lovers. The hero transformed, the heroine in disguise. It's all been done before, by people far more intriguing and clever than we. But you, apropos, you're unique. I've never heard of anyone like you. You're much more interesting than we are. Much too interesting, in fact, to be a supporting character.
Do you truly think so?
Oh, unquestionably. You have a personality. Supporting, incidental characters have personality traits. But you are much more than you're crediting yourself.
And yet...
And yet...
And yet I still have nothing. In many ways, still am nothing.
Do not underestimate the joy of nothing. The problem with having something is that someone else always wants to take it away from you. A man who has nothing to lose and everything to gain. Unless he's wise enough not to gain it.
She got to her feet, her face suddenly serious.
Come, time is running short.
We entered the Shadow City. I had come to think of the darkened section of town as another place entirely, separate from Tokyo, with a life and energy, or lack of life and sucking of energy, all its own. I did not fear the shadows this time, however. I welcomed them, and they welcomed us. Literally. We passed a shadow, and from within came the word,
"Welcome."
I almost jumped as I saw one of the Aeneas ninja emerge from hiding and fall into step behind us. And then from another shadow came a second, and then a third. The shadows in front of us, too, birthed more of the warrior sisters. They were giving us an escort of sorts. Or perhaps they just wanted to make sure there was no trickery on my part.
Word really did get around.
As I said it would.
I saw their eyes glittering in the darkness. None of them were looking directly at me. Instead, they were fascinated with the bundle I was carrying. Obviously intrigued and delighted at the notion that the great, mighty, and divine Imperia was being treated with the dignity usually accorded to a load of laundry. Suddenly, they stopped, which naturally caused us to halt as well.
Here.
Mitsu pointed, and I wouldn't have been able to tell you if it was the same place we'd gone before or somewhere else entirely. We entered, and this time the illumination was a bit more festive. Paper lanterns hung around the room, and there was Vera Wang, seated on a throne-like chair that was in some way similar to the dragon throne of the Imperia. Her eyes glittered coldly when she saw the tapestry I had slung over my shoulder. Mordant was perched on the back of her chair, watching impassively.
"Remove him immediately. This is not appropriate."
"Would you have preferred me to walk through the streets of Tokyo with an unconscious ruler slung across
me?" "Remove him."
I laid the tapestry upon the floor. The Aeneas ninja moved in quickly, rolling him out as smoothly as they could. Unfortunately, the blood upon his back had dried against the tapestry, making a sticky mess. His skin was terribly pale, and for a moment I thought we were too late. But then his chest rose and fell ever so slightly.
"Can you heal him, Noble Ho?"
"Do you think I should?"
"Yes."
"Because you hope that he will be willing to undo the spell he placed upon your lover?"
"Yes."
"Is there any other reason?"
"Because of who he is. To me and to you."
To her, I wondered. Who is the Imperial to this woman whom I love with all my... That was when it struck me with the force of a thunderbolt. The bond that clearly existed between Vera and Mitsu. The affection that I felt for Mitsu as compared to the far greater intensity of feeling I had for Vera. And I realized at that point, even though it had not been as evident thanks to the white face makeup that Vera wore, that there was a resemblance between the two. Vera Wang Ho was Mitsu's mother. I was in love not with the princess, but with the queen. A dethroned, displaced queen, but still a queen to be sure. Or perhaps an imperious, whatever it was she was called in these parts. And I thought, well done. Moving up in the world, I dare say. No more falling in love with the daughters when you can be heels over head with the mothers. Even as I tried to deal with this revelation, Vera was looking down at the Imperial, her face inscrutable.
He once had potential, you know. If any of you had known him in his younger days when I knew him, so much potential. But his urge to retain power became a sick need within him.
Are you to eulogize him, my love, or help him?
And you. I understand you endeavored to betray Mitsu. To betray all of us. Is there any reason that I should not have the sisters kill you where you stand?
I did what I thought was best for her. I wanted better for Mitsu than this shadow existence.
And what would you know of it?
Because I've lived a shadow existence most of my life. I just carry mine within rather than without. And I wouldn't wish that upon anyone, much less Mitsu. You spoke of the potential the Imperial had. What of the potential of his daughter? Is this...
I pointed around the room.
Is this a measure of her full potential?
Interesting. I thought you would say that I should not kill you because you love me. And I love you. And our souls are intertwined.
Why would I waste your time with that which you already know? I could not... Vera... I have utilized in my life every trick, every contrivance, every deception I know for the purpose of staying alive. I could not take what I feel for you and what I hope you feel for me and turn it into just another tool in my tool chest.
Her gaze held mine steady for an eternity, and then she smiled.
Well said.
She nodded towards the Imperial.
Take him in the back. I will attend to him, and then... we shall see what we shall see.
The Aeneas ninja did as they were instructed, although some of them still fired annoyed glances in my direction. But I didn't care. At that moment, my soul was singing within my breast. The next hour stretched on interminably. The silence did not help. All the Aeneas ninjas simply stared at me as if waiting to be told what to do. I thought I spotted the one I'd known earlier. She was looking me up and down, and I noticed that her hands seemed to be sliding into the top of her trousers, descending downward towards her privates. I didn't need to see that, and I certainly didn't want to imagine what she was thinking about as she did it. Even Mitsu said nothing. She simply sat there in what appeared to be a deeply meditative state. Mordant had curled up next to her, and she was idly running her fingers along his scales. He would look up every so often with a gaze of pure adoration. Here I had treated him like a pet, or a talking oddity, and he was a human trapped in this form. Unaccountably, I felt guilty. It wasn't as if I could have known. Still, I felt as if I should have figured it out somehow. With the same type of intuition that had enabled me to divine Vera Wang's true identity. Then others began to arrive. Men, mostly. Men who seemed cut from rough cloth. Men who appeared to be, at the very least, criminal types. They arrived one by one until they numbered roughly a dozen. Each of them, I saw, had a tattoo on the back of his hand. A snake, its tongue lashing out, curled around a pair of what appeared to be grasping scissors. These were the forked tongs. They had to be. When they were assembled en masse, one of them stepped forward.
Where is he? Where is the Imperial? We know he is here.
The Noble Ho is attending to him, trying to save his life.
The Noble Ho should let him die.
There were nods of agreement among the men. Slowly, Mitsu rose to her feet. Mordant, perched upon her shoulder, flared out his wings and conveyed a threatening air.
You see before you the assembled might of the Aeneas ninjas. Furthermore, the might of the Skanky family is in the next building, being held in reserve lest you attempt any ugliness.
What are you saying?
I am saying that if you desire to maintain our alliance, then you will do nothing until...
At that moment, there came a noise from the doorway through which Vera Wang Ho and the Imperia had passed. The attention of everyone in the room was drawn to it. Slowly, the Imperia moved forward into the light of the lamps. He looked around the room, his face dark as a thundercloud, his gaze malevolent.
So, the noble Ho has healed you.
Yes, daughter. I did not ask it, nor did I desire it, but it was done.
He appeared to be glaring at everyone all at once. His life had been saved, and it did not appear to have improved his disposition one bit.
I am going to depart now, unless one of you desires to get in the way of the anointed of the gods.
You!
The Fork Tongue leader started forward. The Imperial looked up at him, and there was something in his eyes that froze the man where he stood. Nothing happened for a moment, and then the criminal backed away.
Father, wait! Wait! Please! The noble Ho cured you, saved your life. I ask a boon in the name of honor. Restore him!
She indicated Mordant, who was looking at the Imperia hopefully.
Only you can do it! Please! In honor's name, you owe us!
What do you know of honor? What do any of you know? Honor is all! Honor is above everything! It is even above petty considerations of personal gain.
And who determines all that? Who sets the standard for honor? How does anyone know?
It is determined here, within one's own heart. That is all you need to know.
But that's not all you need to know. I was standing in his path. Nitu is right. You owe her.
I owe her nothing. If not for her, I would never have been in danger. And I certainly owe that thing nothing.
He pointed toward the doorway. Vera Wang Ho was standing there, hands on either side, looking tired. Whatever she'd done to minister to his needs and cure him of his wounds, it had taken a good deal out of her. My feelings were so torn. Clearly, she was not going to reunite with her husband, but still, the alternative was not going to be pleasant. But at least she would be mine, and we could be together.
So after all this time, I'm simply to be referred to as that thing.
It is all you deserve and more. You are a disgrace, a travesty.
Hey, that's enough. How dare you? How dare you? Whatever it is you believe she did to you or you to her, Vera deserves better treatment at your hands than this. She saved your life and gave you your daughter. You may not think much of Mitsu simply because of her gender, but still, this woman is the mother of your child, a woman that I love with all my heart and who loves me as well. At least I can appreciate her for the wondrous creature she is. How can you not also... What? What's so funny?
I looked at Mitsu in a quandary.
What are they laughing at?
I thought you knew.
Knew?
You said your time with the bathing maiden, it meant nothing to you. That you wanted something else. And all that time with me, you never tried to touch me or...
Because I thought of you as a friend, I didn't want to presume to... What does any of this have to do with your mother?
You idiot! That is not my daughter's mother! That is my daughter's uncle! My sick brother! Except I have no brother!
A faint buzzing started in my head, behind my eyes, just as everyone else was laughing. So did I start to laugh, even as my mind began to shrink away in horror. Vera was smiling at me sadly, shaking her head. Her head. Vera's head. Her head. She?
Yes! No, I...
Yes! This is a joke. An amazing joke, some sort of indoctrination or ritual of acceptance. I understand that now. You wacky chimpanzees. I'd have never have thought that you...
When you disappeared, brother, I thought you had the good grace to go somewhere private and kill yourself and not even leave us a body to clean up. I never dreamt when I heard of this Vera Wang Ho that it was you. Would that I never had.
She... Vera continued to shake her head and step back into the adjoining room, and she was a woman. Of course she was a woman. She was my soulmate. the love of my life, the creature of my dreams, and besides, any number of times, Mito had referred to Vera as she or her. Why, there was that time that... And I ran our conversations through my head with the same type of copious memory that's let me write down my memoir now, and desperately sought for Mitsu using the female pronoun in reference to Vera Wang. There must have been one time, one... No! I wanted to vomit. I wanted to scream, and I charged after Vera with the hysterical braying of the most villainous beings in all of Chimpan ringing in my ears. I staggered into the next room, and Vera turned to face me, and there was such sadness in her eyes.
It's a mistake. Tell him it's a mistake!
We were not a mistake, apropos. We are as one. We saw each other truly from the moment we set eyes upon each other. What do the details matter?
This is taking a joke too far!
He never understood, apropos. Never, but you understood me more in our short time together than all the time when the Imperior and I were brothers.
We were lovers!
Yes, we were. In new and exciting ways for you. Isn't that enough? Isn't that...
But it simply can't be, because I would never fall in love with another man. It couldn't happen. That is the province of sick, demented men. A perversion, not of normal.
Has it never occurred to you, sweet apropos, that normal is not an absolute? That we are what we are, and we must accept ourselves for what we are? You accepted me. You accepted our bond.
The only way a man could make me fall in love with him, and not that it's possible, you understand, but if it was to do something to set my mind, brain-warping perfumes, or trick my...
No, I did nothing like that. The fragrances you smelled, the dim lighting, simply atmosphere. I would have never done anything to impair your judgment, sweet apropos. What we have is real. What we have transcends physical limitations. What we have...
You're not a man!
She reached toward me, and I stumbled backward and fell.
You're not the Imperial's brother! You're Vera!
She threw open her robe, revealing her nude body.
Wang Ho.
She, he, it, looked at me with infinite sadness, allowing the robes to drop, covering the indisputably male body she, he, it possessed.
Apropos, you love me. I know you do, for I love you.
He reached toward me. I backed up, crab-like walking across the ground, shaking my head furiously.
And what we had, we can still have. Only greater than ever, for we know each other now fully. No more hiding. No more uncertainty.
I couldn't think. Couldn't feel. I wanted to rip my body away and leave it behind and run off into oblivion.
Apropos, there is so much good that can be between us.
I don't care.
But don't you see? It...
I don't care.
There was a warning vibration at my hip. At that moment, I didn't notice. All I was trying to do was get myself as far away from him as possible.
Apropos, I love you.
Vera Wang Ho now bore his soul to me, since he had already bared his body. It was the words no one had truly spoken to me and meant since the death of my mother. It was the words that could have filled my life with meaning. And I looked at the face of the man who said them and screamed,
I don't care, 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 I don't care!
Crashed and smoked around me, and burned into my inner eye was the image of a cloud going up and up and up, spreading outward in all directions like a giant toadstool. Something burned at the side of my head, and then nothingness enveloped me. I welcomed it. I floated peacefully, wondering if I was dead, hoping that I was, because if I was simply dreaming or sleeping, then inevitably I would have to awaken, and I had no desire to do so. I saw an image floating toward me. It was my mother. She was shaking her head, and she looked disappointed in me, but also appeared to understand.
It's all right. Everything is all right.
What happened? Am I dead?
Oh, no, my love. No, you're not dead.
Then what?
You were warned, my love. Warned about intensity of emotion. Warned about what it could do, especially when it came to unleashing of power.
But I don't... The sword. I didn't pull the sword. It shouldn't...
Ah, that's the problem with destructive power. You think you control it. You think, as long as I don't intend to use it, it won't be used. But it does get used, in this case, because of the intensity of your denial. You wanted Vera gone.
No.
You wanted all of them gone. All of them. Their laughter, their pity, their knowledge of what a complete and utter fool you'd been. It ripped a hole in your heart, greater than any that had ever come before. Your antipathy for their very existence, your revulsion for your own, was so overwhelming that it activated the demon sword even when you weren't planning to do so. But because it was still within the sheath, the energy built and built and then just released. And now they're gone. Just like that.
No. I wanted to push her away. But I felt as if I had no body with which to do so.
It's all right. Don't be concerned. You were right. Eventually they would have just killed each other anyway. Gone to war in a long, protracted power struggle. By unleashing the power of the ultimate weapon, you avoided that war. You did them a favor.
A favor?
Yes, my dear. It was for the best. It truly was.
She patted my face. Her hand felt cold. All around us was pure, stark, white nothingness.
There's only one problem.
Just one?
The power is unleashed now. More power than the demon sword ever knew it was capable of. It loves that power now. It wants to release it again and again.
I'll destroy it.
You can't.
Throw it into the sea.
If you wish. But the seabeds shift. Tides come in and out. Sooner or later, the weapon will surface. Who knows who will have it then? Anyone could acquire the power. Anyone at all.
It could obliterate the world.
Yes. Yes, it could. That would be interesting.
But you said I'm not dead. It didn't destroy me.
No. You are its master. For the moment, in any event.
So, I'm unscathed.
I didn't say that, my love. Such power as you unleashed does not come without a price. A pound of flesh, as it were. The sword chose the price, and you will have to live with it. Oh, now, apropos.
I ruined it, didn't I, Mother?
Yes. But that's all right, my love.
You ruin everything.
I was lying right where I had been, except that sunlight was streaming down upon me. That should not have been possible. This was the Shadow Town where the sun never shone. The buildings were gone, all gone. There was a faint ringing in my ear. I reached up automatically to touch it and came away with dried blood on my fingertips. My right ear was gone. Something sharp had violently cut it away. The ringing, which nowadays is reduced to a faint background noise, but I can still detect every now and then, continued. Among my possessions was a small tapestry I had been given. It showed me as older, grim-faced, and missing an ear. Was it all fate, then? Had all of this been completely out of my hands, could it truly have been that no matter what I had done, the same appalling fate awaited me and everyone who had been near me? Could the gods truly be that cruel? Sadly, I knew the answer to the question instantly, and that was enough to answer all the ones previous to it. I had collapsed upon my walking staff. Under my friendly auspices, it too was spared. Slowly, I hauled myself to my feet. Pharaoh Wang Ho was dust at my feet. At least I was reasonably certain it was him. He. Her. Her. I once again saw the anguish that had been reflected in her face, trying to defy that which the gods had given her in one of their typical cruel jokes. Yes. Her. The ground was burned in all directions. I took a few steps and stopped once more. The faint wind was continuing to blow ashes all about, but I saw one thing upon the ground that seized my full attention. Burned into the ground was a scorched silhouette. A young woman, it appeared to be, embracing what seemed to be the outline of a dragon. Mitsu and Mordant. All that was left of them blasted into the ground by the force of the energies released. I didn't know why they had been singled out, perhaps because of where they'd been standing. Or who'd been standing in front of them. Or perhaps the gods were even bigger bastards than I had credited them. I stood there for a long moment, waiting for the tears to start, waiting for something. Nothing came. Nothing. And then, I didn't know where it came from or why, but I continued to laugh. I turned away from the scene of lethal devastation and started walking, and I kept on laughing until I finally figured out why. Because I was nothing. Finally and completely, because I was nothing. That used to upset me. It didn't anymore. I moved through the city then. The farther I got from the blast point, the more I began to see signs of life. It had been a devastating blast, but it had not torn apart the entire city. There were survivors, many survivors. Except they didn't appear to be happy that they had survived. Buildings had been knocked down, flattened. Entire blocks had been obliterated, and the people, the innocent people, they wandered about aimlessly, or simply sat in one place and stared off into space, wondering what they had done to deserve this. Many of them were horrifically burned. I felt nothing. So much pain. So much pain. And I felt nothing. When I had been holding the dead kit to my breast, I thought in my cries that I did not care. That I had embraced the totality of nothingness. I had been wrong. I had barely scratched the surface, not even begun to realize the remarkable strength that came from utter nothingness. I had hated the notion that I was known as apropos of nothing. I had wanted to have something, love something, stand for something. How typically apropos to want to rid myself of that which was, in fact, my greatest strength. Something makes you weak. Something makes you second guess. Something makes you doubt. Something makes you love or hate or fear or make mistakes. But nothingness? In nothingness, there is no love or hate or fear. Nothing never makes mistakes. Nothing ventured, nothing gained. Nothing for nothing. Nothing to fear. Nothing matters. In the beginning, there is nothing. We come from nothing, we go to nothing. The message was clear in day-to-day life, and I had been too blind to see it. Ali had tried to teach it to me, and I hadn't been fully ready to appreciate it or understand it. I had thought the strength I sought from Ali came from the sword. It didn't. It came from nothing. The sword was simply a tool. Nothing was impenetrable. Nothing was invincible. I had nothing to fear but something. Darkness was nothing. One could hide in darkness, strike from darkness. Something always bogged you down, be it emotions or sentiment or inordinate possessions. But you are never slowed by nothing.
What are you doing?
Nothing.
What are you looking for?
Nothing.
What are you thinking about?
Nothing.
What's the matter?
Nothing.
Ah, that damn son of mine. He's good for nothing.
That was what I was going to be. Good for nothing. Finally. Here I'd been chagrined that I was known as Sir Apropos of Nothing. As if that made me less than others, when in fact it made me so much more. I had been walking slowly at first, but the more people I passed, the more I embraced nothing. The more confident I became. I didn't care about the blood on the side of my face. So I was missing an ear. So what? I had another. And besides, it wasn't as if a lot of people in the world were saying anything so damned interesting anyway. Once, I would have felt terrible for all these people, whose simple lives had suddenly been sent into disarray. Now I didn't. Once, I might have tried to stop to help them, all the time rationalizing that what I was doing was for myself. Yet now, I didn't have to engage in any such subterfuge for the simple reason that I wasn't remotely interested in trying to help them. Why? Nothing doing. If I did nothing, the world could not hurt me. Never, ever again. Finally, I was at peace. There was only one lingering problem, and that was the sword at my side. It was something. I didn't know what to do with it, however. And then, as I made my way out of town, I came upon two people approaching. One was an overweight warrior. He had stern, pitiless features, a sword tucked through his belt, and he looked at me with, well, with no curiosity at all, unlike everyone else I had encountered. This fat man did not seem to care about me. He seemed to have an appreciation for nothing. Even more curious was his companion. It was a little boy being pushed along in a sort of cart. The boy stared up at me, and he also was not curious. His dark eyes merely fixed upon me. Obviously, the fat man was the boy's father. We stopped and faced each other. The fat man, the little boy, and myself. The father, the son, and me. A mere ghost of what I had been when I first washed up upon the shores of Chimpan. And yet I was not bothered by that. Because nothing bothered me.
Did you see what happened there?
I nodded towards the devastated city behind me.
I saw a cloud. It seemed like a giant toadstool.
Yes, I saw it too.
It's gone now.
No, it's still there. It'll always be there.
I studied him a moment further.
Tell me, would you ever be in a situation where you would give up? Where you would not care about anything?
Never. I have a son. Not caring is a luxury I do not have. Do you have a son?
No.
At that moment, not realizing I was mistaken.
Which is fortunate, because if I did, he would probably want to kill me.
Once again, not realizing I was right.
Here.
I held up the Toshi sword.
Take this.
Why?
Because I am giving it to you.
He took the sword from me and eyed it.
It is a fine blade. What do you wish for it?
Nothing.
Then I will give you nothing.
Accepted.
And so we parted ways, we three. The fat man, who had something to live for, namely his little boy, and I, Apropos, struck out for the north, knowing at long last that I truly had nothing to live for, and was finally looking forward to living it.
Sir Apropos of Nothing, Book 3, Tongue Lashing, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2005 by Second Age Incorporated, all rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Second Age Incorporated, all rights reserved. 2016, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Unauthorized download or duplication is prohibited. Performed by Scott McCormick as Apropos, Yasmin Toison as Mitsu, Chris Davenport as The Imperia, Kimberly Gilbert as Varon Wong Ho, Colin Delaney as Mordant, Bradley Smith as Ronald McDonald, Terence Aselford as Chin Pan Alley, Tony Nam as Double Chin, Scott Graham as Go No Go, Helen Parfumi as Shari, Marnie Penning as Madeline, Danny Gavigan as All Hell, with Joe Brack, James Konachek, Al Twanmo, Eric Singh Dawson, Eva Wilhelm, Patrick Busick, Nick DePinto, Nora Ashrati, Drew Copus, Christopher Graybill, Steve Wanall, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Ken Jackson, Casey Platt, and Mort Shelby. Directed and adapted for graphic audio by Scott McCormack. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Maddie Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Graphic audio sound design and dialogue editing by Justin Wirtz. With additional music by Justin Wirtz. If you missed out on Apropos' previous adventures, be sure to check out books 1 and 2, So Apropos of Nothing and The Road to Wuin, both available in graphic audio. If you enjoyed this title, be sure to look for The Spell Singer series by Alan Dean Foster and The Forest Kingdom Saga by Simon R. Green. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our action-pumped titles, as well as free downloadable extras, audio guides, and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of another exciting title in graphic audio.
Golgotha by R.S. Belcher, a new gothic western.
Welcome to the town of Golgotha, Nevada, just beyond the 40-mile desert. It's 1869, just after the war between the states, and people are moving west to find new lives and new opportunities. We're a cattle town that hides more than its fair share of unnatural secrets. Meet our sheriff, John Highfather, a rebel who bears the mark of the noose around his neck. Some say he's a dead man whose time has not yet come.
People die, Earl. Up on the mountain, down in the valley, everyone dies.
Everyone but you, John.
Everyone but me. You've heard the stories, haven't you, Earl? The stories about me?
They say you sold your soul to the devil, John. That's what they say.
His deputy, Mutt, who's kin to the coyotes.
We're keeping the horses over there so they can stay upwind of me. Horses don't like me.
I thought horses liked Indians.
Well, they don't care much for me.
Our mayor, Harry Pratt, who guards a hoard of mythical treasures and powerful religious artifacts.
The plates revealed that the final days are upon us, that the keys to the bottomless pit are free and in the hands of the Prophet of Darkness. This whole town is about to be wiped from the face of the earth. We need to get everyone together and prepare to get out of here.
Maud Stapleton, a banker's wife who belongs to a secret order of assassins.
Now, you have become a fairly decent knife thrower, and I am pleased with how you are coming along with your short blade fighting, but we still need to work on your knife catching, dear.
And me? Well, I'm Malachi Bick, shady saloon owner, gambler, raconteur, and I have a finger in every secret and shady deal that goes down in Golgotha. I may know more about this town's true origins than anyone. And let's just say my roots go back to the beginning. And I don't just mean Golgotha's.
Go on! Hide! You failed! Your family failed! It's mine! Golgotha is mine! Lick your wounds while you can. Tomorrow is the last sunrise this miserable world of lies will ever see.
So, come on by and stay a spell. If you hurry, you just might beat the devil.
Book 1, Six Gun Tarot, is available now in glorious graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can select from over 900 titles and 60 series in either CD or high-quality download formats. If you would like to listen to an entire series, you can conveniently purchase the whole sets on CD or USB flash drive from graphicaudio.net. at graphicaudio.net, you can now earn loyalty rewards points, redeemable toward future online purchases. You can also get full mobile downloads directly to your phone or tablet with our new Graphic Audio Access app, available on all Android and Apple devices, so you can listen on the go, anytime, anywhere. Call 1-800-670-5220 or visit www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our email newsletter, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter.